Welcome to this Hope video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We're working our way through the book of Ecclesiastes, and we are right in the middle. We're in 2 of 3.
Yes, we are. Nice. Yeah, so we found out last week that the new book, it was written by a king by the name of Solomon. He was the third king of Israel, who was the smartest, richest king ever. Solomon is trying to figure out, basically, what's the meaning of life? You know, what's the purpose here? We saw that he stated his conclusion, and then he walks us through the actions how he got there. So we're going to see him change his thesis as he goes along,
kind
of improve upon it.
Yeah.
And it's really, like we talked last week, it's really us being able to view somebody working through a problem. Here's a solution. It doesn't quite fit, you know, and then coming up with something new.
Yeah.
So kind of cool.
And I really like it because this is a question or a series of questions that people have always asked and will always ask, people ask today. It's almost like he's inviting us into the process with him.
Right.
He's like, here's what I tried. What do you think about it? Here's my conclusion. And he asks it in almost, or he says it in almost in such a way where he's wanting you to come to your conclusion and then share his conclusion. And then, you know,
You don't want to give
it to the same thing, yeah. Right?
You know, right. Yeah. Right. So we ended last week, and where Solomon is standing so far is people should enjoy their food. They should enjoy their drink and they should enjoy their work. Because that's their only reward
in this life.
Yeah, in this life.
That's probably true, right?
Right. All right, so we get into chapter 4, and we're going to be doing 4 through 7 this week.
Mm-hmm.
Solomon investigates oppression that occurs on the earth. And he says, I saw the oppressed, they were in tears, and absolutely nobody was helping them. Those that are dead and are gone are more fortunate than those that are alive. So now he's just making observations.
Yeah.
And those who have not been born, they're even much better off because they haven't seen the evil things done on this earth.
And there are still places in this world today, 3,000 years later, where we, and of course, from our first world, you know, cushy, you know, place, we look at them and say, how do people even exist in situations like that? And we look at some of the cruel terrorism that goes across the world, you know, whether it's against Christians or not, just the things that we do to each other as people is just mind-boggling, right? Yeah, and he's seeing the same thing.
Yeah. So then he talked about the skillful work that he had done, and he says it's profitless. It's like chasing the wind. And then he says the fool who does not work, and he'd previously said, because he tried being a fool for a while, that that was even a little bit worse than wisdom.
Right.
But the fool who does not work, he has nothing to eat but his own flesh.
Yeah.
And it's better. Better is someone that does work but also rests. And one that does too much toil is chasing the wind.
You know,
right? So there's that balance. There.
How many times have we heard someone say, you know, you get down to the end of your life and, you know, people are not going to say, oh, I wish I was at the office more. I wish I was at the factory more. I wish I was with my family more. I wish I took more vacation time or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And then he considered a man that had no wife or no offsprings, and he says there's no end to his toil because he's never satisfied with his riches, right? He has nothing in his life except money, so now he's going to work really hard at it, and that's how he's going to end up spending his life, and it's also futile.
Yeah.
So then he says two people are better than one because they can reap the benefits of each other's labor.
Mm-hmm.
And if one falls, the other one can help him up. But pity the one that doesn't have a companion.
Yeah.
If you fall, you know, if you think about it, right, you're working a minimum wage job. You have a problem. There's nobody around to help you.
Yeah.
You can't get back up.
Right.
Obviously, you can stand back up, but you can't get out of that hole that you just dug for yourself.
Yeah. Very, very difficult. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then from a literal standpoint, if two lie down, they can keep each other warm.
Sure.
Just practical. And two can withstand an assailant. And moreover, a three-standed cord is not quickly broken.
Right. Yeah. Really famous passage there, the two and the three. And, you know, talk about companionship and brotherhood. Right. And people use these, you know, all the time. But this is, I mentioned last week, there are some throughout this, what seems to be a really gloomy funeral type book. There's some gems that are... that sometimes you have to dig through the coal to find a diamond. But this
a poor but wise youth is better than an old foolish king.
Yeah.
And if we think Solomon wrote this late in his life, he was definitely a king.
Is he referring to himself?
He had to be a little bit. And one of the first things he says is, the king no longer knows how to receive advice.
Yeah.
right? You have so many people hitting you from so many different directions. You know,
yeah.
Future generations will not know him or his deeds. Now, that's not in Solomon's case, but for the most part, you know, a king in the Middle East is one of the few we know about.
Well, but even Solomon, if it were not for the Bible, we would have not as much information about him.
Right.
But even what we have, you're talking a dozen chapters, maybe, really, and, you know, so 11 chapters in the book of Kings. And of all of the things that he did, there's really only one chapter devoted in 1 Kings, chapter 4, devoted to non-temple and non-palace. So, and out of that one chapter, 1 Kings 4, there's a paragraph. Oh, yeah, and he also wrote thousands of proverbs and books on botany and all this other stuff. Like, his entire work.
Four sentences.
Yeah, is an also as, right. You know, is an also done.
Right.
And this was, like, Solomon, one of the greatest guys ever.
Right.
And it's been...
Yeah, condensed down that far.
Yeah, so what does that mean for you and me?
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Right. And he says, so it's profitless.
Yeah.
Like chasing the wind.
Yeah. If you're trying to build your legacy, it's like,
yeah,
not many statues going to be built to most of us.
Yeah. So we get into chapter 5 and he's talking about making vows, which I found very interesting. And he starts off with, don't be rash with your mouth or hasty in your heart to bring up a matter before God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we read the New Testament, tell God everything, blah, blah, blah. Someone's like, oh, wait, just put the brakes on here for a minute.
And this is a great reminder of the relationship that we have with God through Jesus that he had no knowledge of, right?
Right.
He had the Mosaic covenant. He had the Mosaic law. He had, like, that.
Yeah, so here's where we were. Where he was, let your words be few when you make a vow to God, or when you make a vow to God, fulfill it quickly.
Yeah.
It is better not to make the vow than to not fulfill it.
Yeah.
Right? So, why make God angry? Instead, fear God.
I like using this at weddings, right? Because they're making vows to each other. But just recently, before this recording, I had someone ask me online about, you know, so what about, you know, when we make our vows to God? And I said, I don't think we should be making vows to God. I will never. Yeah.
And God's just laughing.
Yeah. It's like, I just don't think that's a good idea. You know, God, I promise. Come on.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
What's the point?
Kid telling a parent, right?
Right.
Right. You know, he wants to believe it. They want to believe it. And they also know is you're not going to be
able to. Not going
to
happen. Not going to happen. I think part of maturity and wisdom is saying, yeah, we just don't make vows to God anymore. Yeah.
So when you see extortion, don't be astonished. Solomon saw a ton of that.
Mm-hmm.
Then he reminds people the produce of the land is often seized by officials, mm-hmm. and there's layers of official. And then he also says, where do you think the king gets his food from?
Yeah.
You know, there's just a land that's producing. Everybody's got to eat of it. And guess what? The officials are going to take what
they
want.
He knew about levels of government and taxes and
yeah.
nothing new under the sun.
Right. Right. All right. The one who loves money will never be satisfied with money.
Yeah.
It is futile. And when one's wealth increases, those that consume it increase too.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, today's may or may not be true, but definitely in his time, you know, to make more money, you know, is great, but you have to bring along extra slaves, extra people. Now you have that cost with it too.
Yeah.
And I think that's where he's going here.
I think of, let's just use the lottery. Right? Somebody wins the lottery today, all of a sudden they have family and friends they didn't know about.
Right.
Right. There's always going to be someone there to consume.
Get to help.
And then when you have no money, they're gone. You never hear from them, right?
Yeah.
So even from that standpoint, people are always looking for a handout. So as you gain money, people want to consume your money.
Yeah, and to tag along with that, the owner doesn't really gain anything, and wealthy people don't sleep well.
Yeah. Right?
Worrying about your money, worrying about your business. Is somebody going to steal things from you? What are you doing?
And I think that's one of those things that's true from an under-the-sun view.
Yeah.
If you're chasing money,
right,
then, you're always going to be worried about it being stolen, you know, robbed, the market crashes, you know, whatever. If you're not chasing money, then you get to sleep well at night because that's not your God.
Yeah, right. Right. Wealth hoarded by its owner leads to misery. If that wealth is lost, he has nothing to give his son. You know, he came into the world with nothing. He's going to leave with nothing. And then, which is very Solomon here, mm-hmm. what's the point to toiling in the middle?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You come in with nothing, you leave with nothing. This middle just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Don't like the middle part.
Yeah, Solomon ends this chapter repeating what he's previously said. He says, I have seen personally what is the only beneficial and appropriate course of action for people to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the hard work on earth during the few days of their lives that God has given them. For this is their reward.
Yeah, so I was thinking that, you know, over time we've used phrases, just the general population, you know, carpe diem, seize the day, right? YOLO, you only live once, you know, stop and smell the roses. Those all have a piece of truth in them,
yeah.
Right? They're not the whole thing, but it's sort of like what he's saying. He's like, guys, enjoy the ride because number one, this is the only one you get. And it's not worth working away your whole life and then dying. Right? At least somewhat enjoy the process.
Right.
And I think that's what some of these snippets or phrases try to help us remember is, you know, you do only live once and that's true. You know, should you go jump off a cliff? Maybe, maybe not, you know, if that's your thing, but do something to enjoy life, have a hobby, you know, something that's more than just work.
Right. Well, we get into chapter 6 and Solomon speaking from experience. If God gives a man wealth and property, everything that his heart desires, but the man can't enjoy the fruits of his labor, somebody else is going to enjoy it. And he said this last week also, it's a grave misfortune.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he fathers 100 children, he can't enjoy the prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thinking back to when we were studying Solomon, I remember David had a bunch of concubines, and then Solomon had an excessive number.
Yeah.
I don't know how many that was, but he may have sired 100 children.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But he goes on, even if he were to live forever, right? Even if we did not have an end to this life, if we're chasing the wrong things,
right.
You know, you never enjoy it. You never, that's not what it's about.
Yeah. So Solomon says, a stillborn child is better off than I am.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to...
If
why he's talking.
Well, yeah, if those things,
everything is true.
Yeah, if all of this is true, then it's better to not come into this world at all.
Right. Right.
Right.
All man's labor is for nothing more than to fill his stomach, yet his appetite is never satisfied. So what advantage does a wise man have over a fool? His continual longing is futile, just like chasing the wind.
So that's sort of interesting, right? Because they're and again, I mean, 3,000 years later, we're still saying and seeing some of these things. You know, sometimes I think Mark Twain said something to the effect of, it's actually better to be stupid because you don't know how stupid you are then, right? Or something like that. It's better to be a fool because a fool at least doesn't recognize that he's a fool, right?
Right.
You know? So, I mean, Solomon was already saying this stuff 3,000 years ago.
Yeah. Chapter 7, and again, we don't need to necessarily agree with Solomon's assessment here. He's either working through a progression that he came through with life, or he's also presenting the opposing view intentionally on there. He says, a good reputation is better than precious perfume. Likewise, the days of one's death is better than the day of one's birth.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to go to a funeral than a feast. Why? Because death is the destiny of every person. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of merrymaking.
I do actually like this for funerals, when I preach funerals, because when we are all gathered there thinking about death,
right.
There is something
that brings God? It home. Is there something more? Is there?
Yeah, there is something about that that makes us face our own mortality and makes us think, what is next? Is there something next for me?
Yeah, he's going on, surely oppression can turn a wise person into a fool.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, a bribe corrupts the heart.
Mm.
The end of a matter is better than the beginning. Likewise, patience is better than pride.
Yeah.
So I know I'm rolling these off like you always say, take these slow.
Yeah.
Read them. You know, there's some wisdom in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wisdom, like an inheritance, is a good thing. Wisdom preserves the life of its owner. And he goes into this a couple times, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Consider the work of God. No one can discover what the future holds. It is best to take hold of one warning without letting go of the other warning. For the one who fears God will follow both warnings.
Yeah.
Wisdom gives a wise person more protection than 10 rulers in a city. Solomon said, yeah, and then Solomon's putting all this together, and he says, I've examined all this with my wisdom.
Yeah.
And he said, I was determined to comprehend this, but it was beyond my grasp.
Yeah. Isn't that?
It is far deeper than anyone can fathom.
It's great to come to that conclusion. It's not so great to come to that conclusion because, again, with an under-the-sun view, it can make you feel helpless and useless and just like, what's the point?
Well, especially if you stop there.
If you stop there. And, yeah. And again, just recently I had a conversation with someone about suicide. And I said, suicide, the thought that that is the solution is the result of a loss of hope or a lack of hope. Right? When there is nothing else, when there is no hope, when there is no chance of anything, that looks like a pretty good solution, right? The real solution is to bring back hope, right? That there is something worth living for, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's some of what he's wrestling with here. He's like, you know, when you're in this depressive state and you're just sitting in your hole and there's no hope, what's the point? Right. And again, I keep saying this, but we're 3,000 years after the fact and we're still wrestling with the same stuff that he was trying to help us work through.
Yeah. So then we end this chapter, but we also end this week with Solomon's final thought here. And it says, the teacher says, then I'm going to dump this on you, by the way. I discovered this while trying to discover the schema of things, item by item. What I have continually sought, I have not found. I have found only one upright man among 1,000, but I have not found one upright woman among all of them.
And you expect me to...
I do.
Do what?
Clean it up.
Clean it up.
Right. So he's saying that 1 out of 1,000 men are upright and he has never found a woman who is upright.
Yeah. Seems unlikely, right? Seems unlikely. But I mean, that's what it says. So this is one of those passages where we really, really grow to appreciate scholars, people who work in the original languages, people who investigate cultures and customs and all this mm-hmm. stuff, right? So I want to read a quote. I knew you were going to do this. I want to read a quote from one of our favorite commentators, Tom Constable.
Right.
You can find Constable's notes, 12,000 pages worth of commentary on the whole Bible for free at netbible.org. We highly recommend it. We love it. I'll read you one of his quotes, but let me set it up for you first. In Hebrew, and Greek works the same way, but this is Hebrew. In Hebrew, there are individual words for male and female, man and woman. Okay, gender words, but there's also a generic word for just person. It doesn't matter the gender, it's just person as opposed to animal or something, right? In Hebrew, what happens, and this is written in poetry, we haven't really spent any time on this, but in Hebrew poetry, it's built off of the idea of what's called parallelism, okay? And a lot of times that works like line, counterline. So the counterline could be opposite, could be the same thing in just different words. It could be whatever. But it's usually two parts, line and counterline. Line and counterline could be verse and counterverse, whatever. But it's this parallelism type thing. So what he's doing here is the generic word is not gender specific. It's just person. So there is no... you know, man person and woman person, you have to use the gender specific words there. So if he were saying, I have found only upright males and no upright females, he would use the gender specific words in both cases. What he did instead is he used the generic word first, just when it comes to people in general. But then because of the structure, he has to play off of that somehow. Well, the only way to do woman would be to use the gender specific word because there's right. So it's not like he's saying men good, women bad, and only 1 out of 1,000. So here's the quote after I've set that all up. The man in view in verse 28 is the person who is pleasing to God. Verse 26, the Hebrew word for man here, Adam, which is where Adam got his name, it's Adai, literally just means man, person, is generic and refers to people rather than males in contrast to females. Solomon meant in 28 that a person who is pleasing to God is extremely rare. And of course, we see that all over the Bible. The reference to woman is a way of expressing in parallelism with man or with person that no one really pleases God completely. A paraphrase of the verse is, I have found very few people who please God, really no one at all. The idea definitely is not that one out of a thousand males pleases God and no females at all do. We agree with Tom Constable on this, right? This is a good example of Hebrew parallelism that, if unobserved, can lead to a bizarre interpretation, which, of course, is...
Well, that's why we're doing this, this whole thing.
Exactly. So, if you've never heard of that before, maybe you're like, whoa, hold on a second. This is really weird. This is the type of thing why we still do need scholars and teachers and commentaries out here, because sometimes it just reads weird. And this was a guy writing it 3,000 years ago in a different language, in a different culture, in a different, you know, it's like, okay, we've got to allow...
There's going to be some differences.
Yeah, allow some of that.
Right. Well, that takes us to the end of this week.
All right. We ended on a good note that we're not, you know,
two-thirds of the way through.
Kicking off half of our population. two-thirds of the way through. We'll be back next week with the end of Ecclesiastes. Until then, again, read it very, very slowly. Take your time. Look for those hidden gems in here and wrestle with these truths or these thoughts that Solomon was wrestling with. Feel free to ask. You know, send in your questions or comments. We love to hear that stuff. And share this with anyone that you think, and maybe even wrestling with the same things, right? And we'll pick it back up here next time and finish the book of Ecclesiastes then.
Bye, everybody.